thank you for joining us today on 2012 Journey to Evolution. I'm Tambourine Borelli, and today is the fifth installment of our Prophets Conference series. This year's conference, the theme is 2012 Tipping Point, and it's going to be held in Vancouver, Canada, July 23rd through the 25th, with workshops going on until the 27th. And before I forget, I want to remind everybody, every show, I've been given the green light to give two free tickets to this conference, and they've been very gracious to do that. So anyone who has the bug to go, please give us a call. We'd be so happy to give you the tickets. It's going to be a fabulous conference. I've had some of the most beautiful and powerful speakers on the show so far. We've had Miguel Angel, we've had John Perkins, John Kimmy, Richard Tarnas, and I'm so excited to introduce today's guest. He's widely known for his role in popularizing the Mayan calendar with his book, The Mayan Factor, and being the first one to bring 2012 into public awareness. He's credited with organizing the Harmonic Convergence event of 1987. Wow. As one of the originators of Earth Day concept, Argiles founded the first Whole Earth Festival in 1970 at Davis, California. He is the founder of Planet Art Network and the foundation for the Law of Time. Jose, thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, hey, it's a great pleasure to be with you here, and I just wanted to make one little aside. I noticed how you pronounced my last name.
You know, I knew I was going to butcher that. I was going to ask you.
Yeah, well, I like I did. I've had that before, argue less. So I like to argue less and affirm more. It's pronounced, that's the basis of my life philosophy. It's pronounced Arguelles.
Arguelles.
Yeah.
The LL is okay. Like a Y, just like it's fits.
Yeah,
be.
The LL is like a Y. Mm-hmm.
And now say it again for me one more time.
Okay. It's not Arguelles, but Arguelles.
Arguelles.
Yes.
I got it.
Good.
Thank you for that correction.
I had to live with that all my life, so.
Oh, my God. And apparently you're not done living with it.
No, I'm not.
Sorry about that. It's a beautiful name. I just
want
to start with this quote from a Pleiadian channeling, and I want to get your perspective on it. It says, Egyptians, Incas, Balinese, Greeks, Tibetans, Sumerians, Native Americans, Maya, Aboriginals, and many, many other indigenous peoples have contributed keys of understanding, all pointing to the heavens. If present-day humans could read the steps and clues left by these cultures, they could once again liberate and own Earth. What do you think about that?
That's a fascinating and a remarkable quote. I feel it has a tremendous amount of insight, and it points to a number of different things. One, it points to the fact that our ancestors, our predecessors in virtually all different parts of the world, had a different kind of consciousness and perspective than what we have today. The consciousness, say, of the ancient Egyptians or the ancient Maya or Greeks or Polynesians or whomever, the Inca, the Chinese, that their consciousness was informed by what I would refer to as a cosmic or sacred order of reality. Everybody understood that the human being, the human species, was a medium of consciousness between the earth and the heavens, between the earth and the celestial cosmic order. That perception was maintained for some time throughout the history of the human race. Until basically, of course, we come to a moment not too long ago where everything began to change dramatically. This is not to say that the human race had not experienced its vicissitudes It's imperial conquest, it's wars, it's enslavements, and so on. But generally, the perception of the human as a medium between the earth and the cosmic order, or as a medium between the earth and God or divine consciousness, prevailed until about 500 years ago. At that point, the drama on the earth began to shift, and with the two things, the circumnavigation of the globe, in which we began to see that we were where we were, that we were actually a sphere traveling in space going around the sun, and two, with the rise of the mechanistic time and the industrial revolution of the late 16th and early 17th century, then we could say that the human consciousness began to experience an eclipse of the cosmic order. And as the industrial revolution intensified and spread throughout the world over the last 260 years, the perception of the cosmic order was increasingly put in the background and replaced by the processes of materialism, the belief that the third dimensional order of reality is the only order of reality. Scientific materialism is the only way that we can gain knowledge of the universe, and that the human being became more and more shut down and alienated from nature, living by the clock instead of by the moon. And this then brings about the situation that caused that particular Pleiadian channeling to express itself. If we could regain what we had, or regain that perspective, then of course we would, as it were, own the earth, or we would realize who we were in actual relationship to the earth. But for that to occur, we have to have a big shakedown.
And is that what you would say is happening right about now?
That's exactly what is happening right now. All of this has been foretold, as we know, by many different prophecies and very precisely foretold by the Maya. The December 21st, 2012, excuse me, is, of course, not the end of the Mayan calendar, and it's not the end of the world, but it's the shift point of two major cycles, one cycle ending and a new cycle beginning. The cycle that is ending is what we refer to as the cycle of history, the cycle of now referred to as global materialism, and that cycle is very, very, very rapidly and very dramatically coming to an end, and then a new cycle will commence. But between the old cycle and the new cycle, it's not just a matter of one cycle ending and another cycle beginning, but what kind of cycle is ending and what kind of cycle is beginning. The shift, it's a frequency shift and a dimensional shift that we're talking about December 21st, 2012, will be the most dramatic change in the history of the Earth in the last 600 million years. Since the emergence of life on the Earth 600 million years ago in the Cambrian period to the present moment, we've seen the evolution of life finally culminating in the complexity of the brain and of the human species' capacity to project its thought forms in the form of machines and a machine industrial technology upon the earth, that has reached its culmination. Now we begin the next important phase, and that's the evolution of mind and spirit out of matter. And the first stage of this will begin immediately once we pass through the eye of the needle on December 21st, 2012. We'll be emerging into a new stage where the mind and the spirit will become the predominant aspects of evolution. We've reached the limits of the earth. We've reached the limits of growth. We've reached the limits of materialism.
You know, what's interesting is hearing your explanation in regard to the two. It reminds me of maybe a precursor that we had with ancient Lumerians and Atlanteans, and how the Atlanteans were so highly technological, and the Lumerians were as such, but not in material-wise. It was, just as you're saying, mind and spirit and consciousness. And
yes.
I get, you know, innately I have the knowingness that you know, at that point in 2012, those that have chosen to be here and experience an evolutionary version of themselves absolutely will have the capacity, as our original blueprint was designed to do and to be.
Yes.
It seems like I
would agree with that. There has to be, once one has some kind of understanding and comprehension of the nature of what is actually going on, then of course one really needs to start to, if one hasn't already, prepare oneself for this shift, which means letting go, of course, to the fixations of the past, being able to let go completely, actually, of all sense of ego identity and fixations of the past, to begin to make a real effort to understand the actual nature of the mind, to open one's heart to be free of bias, intolerance, prejudice, and to open to a state of equanimity and to universal love. And then in this way that one actually, so in other words, one has to actually be preparing the vessel. People often talk about this as being the time of the great purification. But the first stage of that is that the humans who wish to participate in this evolutionary shift and experience the transformation through themselves have to become completely purified. We have to purify ourselves spiritually, mentally, physically, so that we're prepared as vessels, because then we can experience the shift, the transformation. Then we can begin the work of purifying the earth.
You know, you just are hitting on so many points that ring so true within me and my own experience that, you know, as far as our evolution within our own bioelectrical system, our own bodies, say, for instance, that it was said there were three times within 1993 that a tidal wave, a galactic tidal wave of electromagnetic frequency came to Earth February, August, and October, and now science has measured that frequency to be more powerful than any of the 142 different modalities that have been around in ancient times, whether it be, you know, Eastern type Qigong, Jorei, or even Reiki, or things like that. This frequency has, I've observed it as many different names. I think that it could not have gone to just one human being. The nature of it obviously is universal, especially if its intention is to evolve our DNA. That I think the key and what I've observed is the evolution of our DNA to get us back to the restored versions of ourselves that we can connect to, that original versions of 12 fully functioning layers of DNA and 12 chakras or seals, as they're sometimes called. And really just, not just on that etherical level, but you hit it right on the head when you talked about how I interpret it to be unresolved issues, you know, unresolved issues, the frequency of those vibrating lower and slower. They're the bricks that are around our necks. It's the baggage that we hold that are holding us in those lower frequencies and the things that are demanding that we let go of them, it's going to get harder and harder and more uncomfortable the more we want to hold on to all of those bricks. We need to just let them go so we can, you know, step into this beautiful new era that's coming.
Yes, that's absolutely correct. It's very difficult. Very often people can sometimes recognize what bricks they've got around their neck, but they're so subtly attached to them in their unconscious that it's very hard to let them go. I've talked to people about universal forgiveness, and I've talked to people who I'm working with or in whatever ways, and you think you're communicating, and you know, there's a message of needing to dissolve these blocks and to get on a page where you can forgive the person that you think has harmed or hurt you or whatever, but the next day then they're at it again. It's very, very difficult. But the fact of the matter is, if you can't do that, you can't swim with a brick around your neck. We need to be able, we have to be light beings in order to receive the light. And you can see all over the world how at this time how difficult it is for people to go to their higher selves, like this thing that's happening in Kyrgyzstan, in former SSR and in Central Asia there with the, you read about these things, these people just going and attacking the Uzbeks, you know, and just massive, you know, the massive mobs of people, including women and children, going around and destroying the Uzbekis. Now, that's just, that's an example of this inability to rise above the shackles of our past beliefs, prejudices, and so on. And when you see these things, of course, it's disheartening, but then you know that the answer really lies in yourself. How many people are there really on the planet who are able to absolutely absolve themselves of their prejudices and their hatreds, who are saying, I forgive everyone, I love my enemy, I am not going to resort to any kind of negative feelings about anyone, situations, of course, ours coming up, and we're being confronted and challenged, but these are spiritual tests. And in the end, how many people are there who will refuse to join in the conflict? How many people are there who can actually forgive? How many people are there who can overcome their greed? How many people are there who can stop hoarding their money? How many people are there who can actually give it all away? That's what we're looking at. It's probably not a huge number of people, but however many it is, it's sufficient to create a critical mass of beings who can join in the same consciousness wave as we approach 2012 to create a, what I would call a telepathic consciousness safety net for the planet to receive the higher vibrations.
I think that's absolutely right on the money. I kept hearing just heart, you know, heart, love, compassion. Because, you know, the people you talk about where it evades them, you know, they'll say one day that they'll, you know, forgive this and that, but the next day they're right back at it. And my hypothesis is that because they don't know the root of it, it's like a blind spot, you know, that all of the blame and the pointing and the holding other people in contempt for acts that they have done, even the most heinous of acts, that everything in our experience outside of ourselves is some fraction of a mirror of self, you know, and where, you know, to ask the question, where am I holding myself in contempt for something, you know, that I have not forgiven myself for, you know, who, what part of this mirror is me? How am I being that way to myself? How I perceive this person as being and what I'm holding them in contempt for? How am I being that way, or how have I been that way to myself? And, you know, it really takes, like you said, my God, how many people can have that kind of love and compassion for themselves, of all people? Because when we have it for ourselves, then what? It's easy then for anyone outside of us for us to give it to.
Yes, that's very important. And it's also important that people don't confuse self-love with a type of egoic pride. You know what
right.
I mean?
Right. Totally. That's a fine line.
Yeah, and that's a really important point, because it's you know, so in other words, like, don't be proud of the fact that you actually can love.
Right. Exactly.
That's a really, really key thing, and that the ability to have a belief or a way that you follow, and to not impose your way on anyone else, to be accepting of well, this works for me, so therefore I'm going to do it, but I don't know if it'll work for anyone else. And
you
so
know,
don't
so
try
true.
To impose what works for you on somebody else, but listen to what anyone else is doing, and try to affirm, if you feel the sincerity of it in other people, whatever it is that they're believing and doing. Because that's another important thing, because we get in all these spiritual battlegrounds and conflicts, and it's really a matter like, okay, well, this works for me, but just because it works for me doesn't mean I need to impose it on anyone else in the world. And I don't care what it can be, a religious belief or a spiritual practice or ideological belief or whatever. But it's very important, because that's that's very much to the root of developing absolute tolerance for all ways of life.
Jose, once again, I think we're going to have a whole hour of just agreeing. I mean,
well, like I said, my name is Argue Less.
I know, Argue Less. I might just keep calling you that as a nickname, because you just are so right in line with everything I really hold dear to my heart, because I've experienced life as almost every religion, and I remember being on my soapbox and telling people that everything from they're going to go to hell to, you know, just how wrong their view was and how right mine was. And now, you know, when I go around or give workshops or speak to anyone, every single time I speak, I'll say, you know, don't be attached to anything I'm saying. This is based on my experience, and it doesn't mean it's the truth. It just means it's my perspective. That's it.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And that's, you know, that's the kind of the quality of faith, spirit and mind that we have to be cultivating and developing, those who can hear this. That's what we have to be cultivating and developing for that time as we get there to 2012. One other thing about this is that we're not just doing this by ourselves. Okay, we are actually doing it with others, for others, and that means that in whatever way we have to learn further methods of what we might call spiritual cooperation, and even more importantly, spiritual synchronization. What I mean by that is that we live on this earth, on planet Earth, Gaia, if you will, and that it's, you know, you're in Vancouver and I'm here someplace in Australia. And thanks to the cybersphere, we're able to have this link up, this communication. But we are scattered everywhere on the earth. As we learn from the harmonic convergence, the key to creating a type of mental shift is planetary synchronization. And that planetary synchronization depends on several things. One, that people, of course, are aware that there is something occurring that will be occurring, and that wherever we are, to know that and to be synchronized with everyone else who is going to be in tune with that particular moment on the planet. And this is important because those moments of synchronization, which we will be increasing as we enter into the 2012 year, that these moments of synchronization create waves of consciousness that wash over the planet. And that's a very, very important point, because this, what we're going to is we talk about going beyond the ego, dissolving the ego. That doesn't mean that you lose your sense of individuation or autonomy, but that you're thoughts, your consciousness, and your decisions are no longer ego-based. This allows us then to merge into the higher collective consciousness, which is the mind of synchronization, the planetary mind of synchronization. And this is actually the beginning of the new mind of the post-2012 consciousness.
Okay, so speaking of post-2012 consciousness, now, it has been misunderstood that the world is going to end at that date, but the world, perhaps as we know it now, will have ended because of the new mind being born again in a whole different other consciousness. Tell me, how do you see that transition? Is it, you know, kind of what we're observing now, how big corporations and, you know, things of that nature will have to, or I'll pose the question, do you see big business and corporations and business as usual having to die for this new era to come in? And what does that new era look like as far as your perspective is?
Yeah, unquestionably that the age of the corporate rule of the planet is swiftly coming to an end. The drama that's playing out in the Gulf of Mexico with BP is just a kind of a mini preview of the undoing of the corporate structure in the world. Just as an aside, Michael Moore's movie Capitalism, A Love Story is a really good consciousness-raising event if you haven't seen it. And I think that gets right to the heart of the problem with the corporations as they have now evolved, with capitalism as it has now evolved. The meeting of the G20 is occurring in Toronto as we speak. And it's always interesting, you've got leaders from 20 countries that are sequestered away in a highly exclusive suburb.
Is that the Bilderberg meeting?
Protecting them. Pardon?
Is that the Bilderberg meeting?
The G20, the Bilderberg, all these people who the G20 are the 20 most affluent nations in the world. The base of them was the G7, which then was, after Russia was communist, became the G8, and then they expanded to the G20. There's still the G7. That's the secret one. They meet all the time, and then they bring in G8 Russia, and then they expand and have the G20. And the G20 is meeting, as I said, in Toronto as we speak. It's mostly like the finance ministers and so on of these 20 most affluent countries. But they need 20,000 police to protect them.
Wow.
Unprecedented number of police to protect these bankers, okay?
What does that tell you?
You don't have to be too much of a fool to figure out what's going on or who loves whom
around
here.
Right, but you know what? There's not any amount of police that can protect them from a natural reaching
nor
out
from
and
their own karma.
On the shoulder.
Yeah, nor from their own karma. It's also interesting that a day or two before these people started to gather, there was an unprecedented 5.5 earthquake that caused all the office workers to evacuate their sky rises in Toronto.
Oh, that's right.
That was the sign that the day of the Bilderbergers is soon to come to an end. And, of course, they're all in a tweak about the failing euro and the European economy and so on. It's interesting that when the euro started to get into trouble, that the European Union voted a $1 trillion bailout package. Now, where does that $1 trillion come from? I was traveling recently in Africa and India, and was overwhelmed by the staggering amount of poverty and just misery.
Right.
And I thought, well, these guys, they can sit around and vote themselves $1 trillion. But
right. They
won't get these countries out of debt, and no one's got $1 trillion to feed the poor, which they do, but they won't do it. So there's a lot of incredible injustice that is now having its karmic downfall. And there's no question all this is to lead to answering what your question was. There's no question that when we talk about it's the end of the world as we know it, but I feel fine. It's the end of the Bilderberger's world. It's the end of the world.
Now, the thing is that in order for that to...
That's the end of the world. Yes.
Now, how do you see in terms of, like, when I think of what force would have to be involved to decimate that world? You know, it may include some cataclysmic type situations, but, you know, based on what I know about thought creating reality, it doesn't mean it has to be individuals' experience. You know, like, there's earthquakes happening now, there's tsunamis happening, there's things that are happening that affect that world that it doesn't yes. necessarily mean it's going to be in your personal reality.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. As we see, I've been keeping this year, I have a map of the world, and I've been plotting the points at which, you know, there have been an unprecedented number of earthquakes this year, for instance, of 7-plus earthquakes. And then this even 5-plus earthquake in Canada that just occurred. There have been 4 volcanoes that have gone off this year so far. There was another earthquake yesterday in the Solomon Islands, and the seamount floor off Australia has started to rise, and no one can figure out what that's about. The fact is that there is I'm beginning to see the pattern of where these events are occurring and the kind of pattern that it creates, and there's no question that that level of the Earth's response to what you might call the corporate manipulation of the human race is now in process, and that will continue. That will continue. That will continue to affect and devastate the financial structure, which is already now on very, very wobbly legs. So we'll see. We will see what we would, but in conventional terms, might be called an absolute financial collapse, which is now in the beginning stages. They all thought that it went away for a little bit, but now it's the same talk again. Biggest austerities in the UK since the 1930s, and so on. Well, it's going to continue to occur, and we're going to see along with that then the breakdown of the structure of the technosphere, the technological sphere that holds the present reality together, the transportation systems, the energy systems, the urban centers, the communication systems. All these are going to start to falter. Now, there's one major factor that we also have to be looking at during the year 2012, and that's the solar flares, the solar storms. NASA has gone on record already predicting that in 2012, most likely, that there will be a type of solar flare, solar storm, a coronal mass ejection of such a nature that it could knock out the electrical power grid of the present infrastructure of global civilization up to 3 months. Well, if that happens, that's the end of the world as we know it, absolutely,
right.
Unequivocally. And that's something I think that everyone should actually be giving some thought to and being prepared for. Michio Kaku of NASA is also on record on this matter. And the fact is that on June 3rd, 2007, there was a breach of the electromagnetic field caused by a solar wind of unprecedented intensity. Now, this breach, the size of the whole of the Earth itself, of the electromagnetic field, meant that unprecedented amounts of plasmas entered the electromagnetic field, particularly in the polar regions. Now, those plasmas are there stored in the electromagnetic field. Now, binary spot sun cycle, that has begun again there on May 4th. There was a coronal mass ejection caused spectacular auroras in the southern hemisphere. When those coronal mass ejections reach a peak in 2012 and they hit the electromagnetic field, they will cause a download of all that unprecedented amount of solar plasma they'll cause that to saturate the lower electromagnetic field of the Earth and probably fry the electrical system. In 1859, a similar event happened. All that we had back then was telegraph lines, and most telegraph lines and stations in the world were fried when that happened. Well, it's a very different world from just telegraph. Everything we have, satellites in space or cell phones, the whole cyber sphere that is everybody's, that's got everybody hooked up right now, may well be gone by the middle of 2012. And that will be the end of the world. That's why I said we really have to think about that and understand that. I'm saying that the reason for that happening from an evolutionary point of view is because when we get to the post-2012 consciousness, we are supposed to be operating with our telepathy, just like the dolphins and the whales.
Yes.
And right now the cybersphere is our virtual telepathy. Tweet and Twitter is our virtual telepathy. But we have to get to the real thing, and the only way we'll be able to get to the real thing is by wiping out the old system in this way. So that's why I mentioned the synchronization factor. We have to begin to understand more and more the nature of synchronized events, because in synchronized events, that's how you create a telepathic field.
And see, listening to how you're breaking it down, I can internalize that, not with fear, but just clear, logical assessment of, okay, well, this is likely to happen. If I know it's likely to happen, I can prepare to have what I need to live for at least a few months. If I have what I need to live, then it takes the fear out of not, you know, having food, shelter, water. And if I'm not in fear, then I have a greater opportunity to not be caught up in some chaotic, life-threatening situation, because I won't be tuned into that radio frequency, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. And it won't be a radio frequency to tune into.
Right, it'll be our own.
Yeah, so...
You know, that brings me to another question I want to ask you about. I want to ask you about your view on multi-dimensional cells and parallel timelines, and that in regard to this new era, specifically in regard to 2012.
Yes. Well, of course, there is a multi-dimensional universe. The problem that we have in the present mindset and the globalization world that we live in is that educationally, our minds are conditioned to accept only the third-dimensional reality as real. Most of us are shut off. If we go too far and we explore a paranormal dimension too far, we have to be careful what we say and how we express ourselves. The fact is that, for instance, like the reason psychedelic drugs have had their waves of significance is that they opened out of, they created, they said, wow, hey, wait, there's something else going on here. Not that the psychedelics should be confused with the other reality, but they open to these other realities, and we could see, oh, yeah, there's other dimensions. There were, not only are there other dimensions, but we're not alone in this. And we're actually multidimensional beings who have been stunted into these little globalized consumers.
Right.
And we're that's not us. That's just a straitjacket that they put around me and tied it up with a few dollars. And we're not that. We're cosmic beings, multidimensional cosmic beings. And so we're opening up to that. And when we open to that, we realize, yes, the world is very, very different. There are levels of civilization and consciousness evolved way beyond where we are. And these are the beings that are sitting here going, hum, 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 ho, hum, when are they going to get it?
Well, I'm going to tell you that it wasn't until recently that I broke out of what you just described, you know, the civilization that teaches us, if you ever have a multidimensional thought, much less talk about it, you're crazy. So recently I've broken away from that to such an extent, I'm going to say it out loud on the radio right now, that I literally have memories of dying in, not in another life, not in a past life as someone else, but as Tambourine Borelli. I have at least 3 memories of dying in an ominous wall of water, once when I lived in Chicago, once when I lived in Los Angeles, and another time here in Washington, and it has been the pieces of the puzzle that have been accumulating for the past 10 to 15 years that has formed this hypothesis that I have, that we are literally living in a Groundhog Day time loop leading up to 2012, and why we may hear time to time from beings that channel information that say, you know, it's a front row seat. Everyone in the galaxy is watching because it has not happened this way ever, which implies to me that if it hasn't happened in this way ever, that means there's many infinite versions of how this happens. And depending upon, like, how we're thinking, what we're feeling, the beliefs that we're holding, we're tuning in on whatever radio station, whatever reality that is. So we could fluctuate, you know, between what reality we're actually going to experience in 2012.
Yes,
I know
exactly.
That sounds crazy, but...
No. From the point of view of my galactic friends, that's normal thinking.
Well, brother, it's good to hear because it feels more at home than some of the things I experience from day to day in so-called reality.
Yes, so-called reality. Well, one other thing I'd like to make a point of while we're talking about this is that in talking about the post-2012 consciousness, many people are familiar, at least some people may be familiar with the concept of the noosphere, which was brought up in the works of Pierre Teilhard de Chardin. The idea of the noosphere is that we are now we're headed for a new geological era. We're headed for a new phase of evolution, which is referred to as the noosphere. The noosphere literally means noos is from the Greek mind, and then sphere. It's the sphere of the planetary mind. Like there's the biosphere is the sphere of life, and the atmosphere is the sphere of the air, and the stratosphere and the magnetosphere. So the noosphere is the sphere of mind. Right up till now, the noosphere has been in the collective unconscious. Now, and as we know, we're all wired, we're all hooked up, the almost 7 billion of us, everyone has got their cell phones and everything, and everyone's, or their internet, whatever, everyone's wired, everyone's hooked up. I mean, this is the virtual noosphere. This is the noosphere where there's still wires and transistor chips and so on like that. Well, what we're heading to is the phase called the noosphere. As I mentioned, this is the most important, most significant transition that has occurred on this planet since 600 million years ago with the emergence of life. Post-2012 is the emergence of mind and spirit evolving out of matter. That begins then. The first phase of this is called the noosphere. Teilhard de Chardin said that the noosphere would come about because we would create this kind of network around the planet, which we've done. Now, we've done that now. That's the cybersphere. The other person who wrote tremendously about the noosphere was a Russian scientist named Vladimir Vernadsky, to whom we owe much of what we understand about the biosphere as the unitary sphere of life on Earth. He also, with Teilhard de Chardin, coined the word noosphere in 1926. They were looking for a word that would describe the consequences of the impact of human thought on the environment. They saw that the present stage, that what was going on geologically, is for the first time in the geology of the Earth, an impact was being made by another species through the medium of its thought that was altering the environment. They saw that they foresaw their climate change and all the effects of the pollutants and the toxic waste and so on as turning the biosphere upside down, only that it would then transform into a new state. And they said, what is this new state of evolution, this next stage? And so they came up with the word noosphere. That's it, because it's the stage in which the thinking element becomes conscious and becomes a planetary phenomenon. It becomes conscious and a planetary phenomenon because it comes into telepathic union with itself all over the planet. And this is the stage we're going into. It's radically different to be floods into telepathically to a collective consciousness than it is to be operating with your ego in your own closet.
Now, Jose, doesn't that make perfect sense in regard to, you know, think about it, 2012, we're in 2010 now, everything that's happening with the Gulf, the absurd amounts of toxins in the water, in the air. Now, by the time we get to 2012, who knows what will have unfolded in order to bring down the reality of the way the world has been. But what you're just saying now, you know, it gives people hope. There's hope, because when we evolve to our highest version of ourselves, that we have the power to transmute toxins in the water, clean the air by the power within our innate selves, our mind, our hearts, our compassion, everything that vibrates to, that frequency, is absolute, a whole different reality. We will have the power and the capability to do just what you're saying.
Exactly. We are going from being human to going to becoming superhuman. We're going from nature to supernature. We're going from conscious to superconscious, from mental to supermental. And that's a quantum shift that is staggering and virtually impossible to envision from the little peepholes of our egos.
Right.
We have to really break out of that and into actually experience cosmic consciousness, to actually experience the nature of reality with all of our pestering little thoughts. That's actually to experience that and then realize that this is the actual nature of reality, that this is the medium where telepathic communication across the universe occurs, that this is the medium that opens to all of our unexplored potential. It is said that we only use 15% of our brain right now, and that 15% is what we might call the most superficial conditioned aspect. The other 85% of our potential is going to come into play after 2012. And where that is when we're going to realize that everything that we thought was paranormal is actually normal. That we're going to see a new paranormal beyond that. Well, that will really blow our minds. But we're going to come into this place where the paranormal is the normal. That, as you were saying, Tambourine, we're going to realize that we can fix this with our own minds. Our minds can join and learn telepathic sciences that know how to dissolve the crystalline structures of the nucleuses and the protons of the chemicals of toxic waste.
Yes.
How to reverse that, how to dissolve it into a rainbow.
All and more importantly, the power of our hearts, I think, is the key.
Exactly, because when our heart is open, there are no obstructions. There are no obstructions to our potential. There are no obstructions to what we can conceive of doing. There are no obstructions to our capacity to unify with all that is, to attain the oneness that allows us to experience what I will call the descent of the supermind of the divine nature, which is actually the unfolding of the next stage of our evolution, which will, you know, if it took 600 million years to get to this, then as our mind emerges, we're going to find that finally this was what it was about. We were supposed to become a planetary being, a planetary organism. We already are. We just don't own it. We all want to remain separate, but we're already a planetary organism. We're the only organism that can virtually live anywhere it wants in whatever climate. So we're very, very flexible and adaptable. But we're supposed to now unify our mind with the planet and coordinate it so that we begin to experience the actual nature of evolving into participating in the one unitary cosmic civilization that exists in the higher mental strata throughout the universe.
Now, doesn't that sound like something to look forward to?
Well, it is.
I always say,
I personally think it's great.
I say the future is bright. Pass it on.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. It's just, it's, you know, like, we're a planetary being. We've been having a bad dream and gave us a big high fever, but the fever is about to break. And when we wake up and get out of this, we'll wipe our brow and realize that, like, oh, hey, we're okay after all. But, and you know what else? We got expanded powers.
And check this out, Jose. You know, I mentioned about the 12 layers of DNA.
Yes.
Think about not only us living where we want to live, but as long as we live. There was never a set time for us to die. And the instructions on telling the thalamus to keep rejuvenating the blueprint is programmed within those other 12 layers of DNA. So the hypothalamus and the pineal get the instructions from the thalamus, or they actually give the instructions to the thalamus when they get that program from the DNA, and the hypothalamus and the pineal will tell the thalamus, keep rejuvenating the blueprint. No one's body living right now is older than 7 years old. I'm sure you know that. So we will not only have the ability to clean up what the mess has been, but we'll have such a pristine, beautiful home again, and we'll be able to enjoy it as long as we want in this body. How cool is that?
Yeah, that's very cool. There's no question about that. For everybody who's listening there, I'd like to give our websites so you can get more information about what I'm talking about. And we have a couple of websites, maybe three of them. Well, our main website is www.lawoftime.org, lawoftime.org. Another one that we have, which is more specifically about the Noosphere, is www.noosphereforum.org. Noosphere is spelled N-O-O-S-P-H-E-R-E, noospheforum.org. And then third that we have is www.crest13, that's the number one and three, crest13.org. Crest13 is a project that our organization has got going to set up a network of communities around the planet that are self-sustaining and that are doing synchronized telepathic meditation exercises in preparation for 2012. You might want to look into that. That's www.crest13.org. Everything about the Noosphere, you'll find www.noosphereforum.org. And everything about the nature of the changing time and the new calendar, you'll find on www.lawoftime.org. We're changing frequency. we're going from the mechanical frequency of time, the artificial frequency of mechanical time, which is 1260, a regular 12-month calendar, and mechanistic 60-minute hour, which is calculated to drive you crazy, to the natural frequency of 1320 ratio, which is a ratio constant, the universal frequency of synchronization. And if you wonder about that, figure this. You've got 13 major articulations in your body, two ankles, two knees, two hips, two wrists, two elbows, two shoulders, and your neck. That's 13. You got 20 fingers and toes. Welcome to natural time. You're it.
Wow. Jose, my goodness. I wish this show was 2 hours.
Well, we'll be up there in Vancouver, so why don't you come and join us, and we'll talk on my presentation is going to be on the morning of July 25th, which in the new time is called the day out of time, the time to experience the fourth dimension.
Wow. Wow. Okay, so everyone heard it. Come see Jose. That is, what day are you speaking? Do you know?
It's Sunday morning, July 25th, at the Prophet 2012 tipping point. Yeah, we're past the tipping point.
We're past the tipping point for sure. Is there anywhere else that that they can see you or anything you've got coming up you want to tell anyone about?
No, I don't do too many presentations. As a matter of fact, after this one, I'm not sure I'm going to do any more. as I'm going to be hunkering down and preparing a lot of telepathic exercises. So this is probably, this may well be my last one before 2012.
Beautiful. Well, you heard it right there, everyone. It's your last chance. So come down and hang out in Vancouver, July. Well, it starts on the 23rd, but he'll be speaking on.
And I'll be speaking on Sunday morning, July 25th, a day out of time.
Beautiful. Jose, it's been such an honor, and I really, really enjoyed talking with you. And if you just hold on for a minute, don't hang up, but.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
I'll hold on.
And yeah, please hold on. Everyone, thank you for joining us today. If you have any questions, please feel free to email me at evolution@tambourineborelli.com. Hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll see you next week. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Throughout space and time, your love has always been mine, and my love will always be yours. I've been loving you so long.
Loving you, loving you, loving you.